Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 4th, 2019. This is episode 1615. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. You just remember your master password, and LastPass remembers the rest. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. And by FreshBooks, the number one accounting software in the cloud for self-employed professionals and their teams. Make confident business decisions with ease while using FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/TechGuy. And by Epson's EcoTank printers. Kiss expensive cartridges goodbye. Add an Epson EcoTank printer to your home or office. EcoTank comes with a ridiculous amount of ink. Just fill and chill. Check out Epson.com/EcoTankLeo to learn more. Well, hi. How are you? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers. Yes, the internet. Yes, home theater, digital photography. You know the rigmarole. Smartphones, smart watches. All that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, well, you can still call. You just have to use Skype out or something like that. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. That's where you can go whenever you see or hear something on the show and you want to make a note of it or remember it, or you have a comment, maybe you want to yell at me. That's the place to do it. You just go to techguylabs.com. No sign up. It's free. And it's there all week long. So it's kind of a resource for you. Anytime you want to use that, I hope you will. Techguylabs.com. My goodness. Let me think. We talked yesterday about a UK company that is setting up bars. They call it AI bar, with face recognition, so that when you go into the bar, the camera captures your face and puts it up on the screen, and the bartender knows what order you came in and serves you. And you can add your tab to your face, your special drink to your face. I mean, I guess that's no different than the bartender recognizing you. It just automates the whole thing. This is the slow, gradual march of face recognition. It's the frog in the boiling water story, by the way, which we found out is not true. So we've said this for years. You know, you put a frog in a pot of cold water, and then you slowly heat it up. The frog won't notice and will be boiled to death before they even jump out. But that's actually not true. Somebody tried it, and the frog is smart enough to jump out. Maybe we're not so smart, because we're slowly ratcheting up face recognition. Apparently, China, which is the leader in all this stuff, is turning away from QR codes. You see, it's really interesting to see how that happened. It happened first, I think, with a... The QR code was first used by, I think, a Japanese auto parts company. Keep track of their auto parts. But pretty soon you see it everywhere. And in Japan, you see them everywhere. Those are those square, weird, sometimes they're round, little squiggly things that you see. And you point your phone at it, and then it opens up a web page or does an app or whatever. People use it I noticed street buskers. You know, like people playing music on the street these days? I saw this the other day. They'll have a little QR code on their violin case. And they say, Venmo me. You don't even have to give them money anymore. You just use a QR code, opens their Venmo account, and you send them money. Well, apparently it's over in China. So just, you know, this is how things happen. Now they're using face recognition. Face recognition for payments, which actually is a little scary, because you don't have to do anything. You just walk up to the cash register and the guy says, thanks. Here's your coffee, Mr. Laporte. Thank you. Goodbye. Wait a minute. I didn't do anything. No, it's okay. You don't have to. We charged you from your face. Yikes. I don't know if I like this. Vendors from supermarkets to bakeries have adopted face recognition payments technology. There's got to be. I hope there is, but who knows? You never know. But I hope there's something like your phone then goes beep and says, did you want to give this person money? I hope so. I'm not clear on that. It's got to have something like that, right? Otherwise, people just charge you walking down the street. It's convenient. It's efficient. Alipay does it. You know, Alibaba, which is the kind of the Amazon of China, has this Alipay system. And they call it their Dragonfly face recognition system. It was an upgrade of something you might have seen. I remember this. Amazon tried this out. Smile to Pay. Or no, it was Google that did it. This was a couple of years ago. Maybe it didn't work out so well. Smile to Pay. You look. They were doing it at McDonald's. Do you remember this? I mean, not every McDonald's, but a couple of McDonald's. You'd go, I'll take my Big Mac. Okay, smile. And it's paid for. Well, that's apparently what they've got in China, 300 cities in China. Now, WeChat, which is a competitor to Alipay, WeChat is man, WeChat, talk about looking at WeChat and thinking, well, this is what Mark Zuckerberg wants to do with Facebook. Everything, they do everything on WeChat. It's a messaging platform, but you can buy train tickets, opera tickets, whatever you want, you can buy through WeChat. WeChat has something similar, scans a customer's face. Maybe it's on. Now let me think about this. Maybe it's on your phone. I don't know how it works. This is from the South China Morning Post. Walk into a CP Lotus supermarket in Beijing today. You'll see cashiers equipped with Alipay branded tablets. Customers can have their purchases rung up by the cashier, and if they choose face recognition to pay, all they need to do is look at the camera. In seconds, the system recognizes who the user is and money is deducted from their Alipay account. Oh, that's what could possibly go wrong with that? No more fumbling. See, this is the problem. I remember when Apple came out with its Apple Pay, the Apple Watch thing, and people said, see, it's so much easier than getting a credit card out of your pocket. Is it? Is it really? See, face recognition is so much easier than putting your watch on a thing. Might as well just deduct it from my salary, right? Just take it out. We know you're going to buy something sometime this month. We'll just take it out now. Here's a quote. David Wang, 30-year-old game developer in China. Facial recognition payment is very convenient. It saves me time as I do not need to pick up my phone to look for my QR code. All I have to do is look at the camera. We live in a brave new world, and it's happening. But the thing is, it's happening slowly like a frog. In the water, so slowly we don't even notice, inch by inch. Good news, if you were worried, and I think a lot of you are, about having one of those voice assistants in your house, the Amazon Echo, the Google Assistant, the Home Hub, the Siri Pod, whatever Apple calls it, the Home Bud, you know, they listen all the time. They're listening for their special word, which is why I'm careful. I try not to say the special word. And then they wake up and they send whatever you said back to the home office. What we've learned now about all three, though, is some percentage, Apple says about 1% of all the recordings are listened to by humans, and they call it grading. They're saying, well, how close to what the human said did the computer understand? And is it, you know, and this is how they make it better. The problem is, in all three cases we've seen, and you know this, sometimes you get false positives. Like, it thinks you said, hey, Echo, and you didn't. You just said, well, I could think of a few things. But they weren't, hey, Echo. And what they're getting is people making love, having fights, personal discussions of all kinds. They're recorded. And then some percentage of them are listened to by actual human beings. Apple says, well, don't worry. No one knows who you are. Unless you say your name or, you know, identifying information. So fortunately, thanks to the light shed on all this by the Guardian and other newspapers, all three, Apple, Google, and Amazon are saying, okay, you could turn it off. If you don't want us to do that, turn it off. Now, you've got to figure this out. If you're on an Echo, you have to go into the Echo app and then isn't that enough? Not as easy as paying for groceries through their face. They don't want to make it that easy. So you can turn it off. It's just something you should be aware of. I think people who are worried about this already know not they don't have this stuff in their house, right? You don't have it. I have them everywhere. But I'm sitting in front of a microphone. My phone has a microphone. My phone has a camera. Even if you didn't have an Amazon Echo in your house, you're carrying a smartphone that has a microphone on it all the time. So I figure, oh, this is the frog in the water again. Oh, the heck with it. What could possibly go wrong? 8888-ASK-LEO. I could think of a few things now, unfortunately. I've been watching TV. There's a TV show called Year After Year, and there's Black Mirror. There's all these TV shows about, that's what they're about. What could possibly go wrong? And apparently everything in every way. And I'm a little scared about the future, so maybe I'm a little more aware of it than I used to be. I don't know. Are you? 8888-ASK-LEO. Do you let these guys listen? What are you going to do? 8888-ASK-LEO. We could talk about it. We'll get to the phones in a minute. Kim Schaffer's here. She's answering your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, techguylabs.com, the website. What else do I need to tell you? There's a chat room if you like to chat, irc.twit.tv, all the other people listening. We'll be back to the phones right after this. It looks like Michael Cozio got the memo.
He did.
He's playing the Kim Schaffer theme. Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer. Schaffer. She's the unbreakable phone angel, and every single week she's here, which really does prove you're unbreakable, Kim.
And loyal.
And loyal. Thank you. Are those other radio show, talk show hosts trying to steal you away from me? Is that it?
No.
I stole Heather away from Dr. Dean.
Dr. Dean retired.
Oh, I know, but I still pretend I stole her away.
Yeah.
So Kim's been here since early, the wee hours of the morning. I'm very excited to have you here answering the phones and to speak to our first callers. Who should we talk to?
I think Joe in Tampa Bay on line 3 is good. He's got a very interesting question that I don't think anybody else has asked you before. So.
Which means I won't know the answer. So
it's
that's
possible.
Great.
It's
thanks
possible
a lot,
you won't,
Kim.
But let's see.
All right.
Let's see how your brain's firing off this early.
What? Joe, Tampa Bay, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Leo. I had a heart attack Tuesday.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. They put a splint in my heart. My back hurt worse than the actual surgery. I have a bad back. Anyway, my back hurt worse. I had to lay on my back. So anyway, they got me out of the hospital, and I'm looking for a fitness tracker and a phone case that might be able to hold some nitroglycerin tablets. You know, I'll probably get a little key fob or something and put some nitroglycerin tablets on the key fob. But I was hoping to find a phone case for my Moto G6 that would hold some nitroglycerin tablets, and I was wanting to pick your brain about these fitness bands, what you would recommend. I'm a Google world. I got the Google Fi phone and the Google Wi-Fi and all that stuff, so I'm in the Google world, and I was wondering what you'd recommend, sir.
Oddly enough, there are smartphone cases that will hold pills. Now, nitro pills are pretty small, right? You don't need a giant...
Yeah, real small. No, yeah. I mean, 5 of them is about the size of an aspirin.
Yeah. Oh, they're really tiny. Well, I use wallet cases, which I like. But I do think that there are, oddly enough, phone cases that would have enough... You just need a little pouch, don't you? Yeah, you don't...
Yeah, or some sort of... I was thinking about a little lanyard hooked up to the case I already have, but... You know, I went looking, and first of all, I don't see too good. I wrecked my e-bike Tuesday.
Oh, man. What a rotten day. What a rotten week you've had.
That brought on the heart attack.
Oh, man.
I had 3 miles on the e-bike, and it was hot out, and I hit a slick spot in some decking. And
well, now my personal chat room physician, Dr. Mom, says nitro tablets have to be kept in an airtight light blocking vial. So this is going to maybe be a little bit more tricky. I think you're going to need something to put on your keychain, as you said. And I've seen a lot of little things like that for the keychain. The chat room has found a number of good things that are specifically for nitro pills. Because you really, I guess they are pretty fragile and they need to be protected pretty well. But I see it. Like, here's a little one. It's $8 from Apex. It's the Apex Nitro Now Protective Nitroglycerin Case. It's about the size of it's nothing. It's tiny. And it has a gasket to keep the air out. It is, I think this looks really good. And you could put that on a keychain. It's got a little hole for your keychain. And it's actually probably smaller than a key. It's not very big. So I guess Nitro does require some special storage. So I guess a phone case may not work for you. And they are somewhat fragile too, and you don't want to crush them. So I'm gonna say don't do that. But this Apex Nitro Now is tiny and looks great. Now, next thing. You want a fitness tracker. And there are lots of good fitness trackers out there. Ideally, you would want one that not only measures steps, which they all do, and frankly, that's mostly what they all do, even though they'll say, well, we're going to measure your bicycle ride or your swim or your elliptical runner. It's all really pretty much just measuring steps. They're not really good. For instance, I use a rower. And nothing I know of will really handle the rower right, because you're not moving your legs, you're just rowing, and it doesn't know what you're doing. But heart rate is a different matter, and there are a number of heart rate, and those are fairly accurate. The wrist is not the ideal place, but they are fairly accurate. I might mention, honestly, the Apple Watch I think is probably the best, but you're an Android guy, so it's not going to help you. Of all the heart rate monitors that I've used, and I've used them all, it's the one that is the most accurate compared to, say, using a Polar monitor with a chest strap, which is, of course, the gold standard for home heart rate monitoring. The Apple Watch matches the chest strap every single time for me. Can't say the same for Fitbit, but I think the Fitbits are pretty good. How accurate do you need it to be, honestly? I mean, what you want to know is my heart rate elevated? Am I in my zone? That kind of thing. And you'll learn pretty quickly with any of these. So, a Fitbit Charge or one of the little Fitbits, those are great. There's another thing that's a little more expensive. It's about Apple Watch price, but it's kind of an interesting product. I wear it. I like it. It's a ring. It's called the Oura, O-U-R-A, ring. And it is actually a more accurate heart rate monitor because it's on your finger, where the veins on your finger actually are a little more accessible. It also, you can wear it to bed, and it's a very accurate sleep tracker. It measures your body temperature very accurately, and sometimes that's a useful indicator. A low or high, even by a quarter or half degree body temperature, can be a precursor to illness, can give you some idea of how you're doing. It does heart rate variability, which is also a very useful measure. That is the difference in time between heartbeats. And oddly, you want it to be more variable, not less variable. But it measures that, and so can give you a fitness-ready. But the drawback to the Oura, it has no display. Obviously, it's a ring. It's small. So you have to look at it on your phone. So for exercise, where you really want to say, am I in my zone? And for you, right, I'm sure the docs have said, well, you want to exercise, but you want to make sure you don't exceed a certain amount. Right, you want to get in your zone where you're getting some aerobic, but you're not getting anaerobic, and you're not stressing your heart, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, well, it's blood pressure that, I guess is really the thing that.
Yeah, and I don't know of anything that will do real-time blood pressure. That is a really good question. I measure my blood pressure every morning, but I use a cuff. It's, so I don't think there's anything like that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dr. Mom is saying she recommends to her patients, because she deals with this a little bit, she's recommending a Garmin. Garmin makes excellent fitness trackers, and it's called the Garmin VivoFit 4. It gives you steps, it's a little rubber band. It's not obtrusive. It will give you, you can shower with it, you can swim with it. It apparently does kind of know what you're doing. It steps, distance, calories, monitors sleep. Does it do heart rate, though, Dr. Mom? I don't see a heart rate on this. And, of course, nothing that I know of will do blood pressure. It doesn't look like this does heart rate. It's really just, these are all, many of them are just fancy pedometers. Apple Watch is the best thing out there. It also has that ECG thing, that's not for your condition. That's for AFib. But again, you'd have to have have to have a Apple phone for that. Now, Dr. Mom's mentioning the cardio, which I also have, but that, Dr. Mom, that does an EKG, but it's for AFib, right? Would that be of use for a cardiologist for somebody who's had a heart attack, Dr. Mom? Yeah, I think not. Although it's a $99 device that works with your phone.
It's What's the name of that one again, Leo?
That's really cool. I have one. I really like it. It's the Cardia with a K, K-A-R-D-I-A. And it comes from a company called AliveCore. And it's $99, and you have a special phone app. And, oh, wait a minute. Now, it says in 30 seconds, detect atrial fibrillation, bradycardia, tachycardia, or a normal heart rhythm. I, of course, ask your physician, is this a good idea? Would this be helpful? If it detects a problem, it will automatically send your EKG to either your physician or one of their physicians. But this is one where it's medical grade. It's one where you want to ask your doctor and see if it's something that would make sense. It also does heart rate, but you have to put your thumbs on these sensors. It's got two. It's a little thing. Fits in your pocket. It's tiny, but it has two sensors you put your thumbs on for about 30 seconds, and it does give you the heart rate. It does not give you blood pressure, I'm sorry to say. But I would certainly look at the Cardia, K-A-R-D-I-A, from AliveCore. So, again, ask your physician and say, hey, is this the kind of thing I should monitor? Would this be helpful? But if he says so, I love it. I use it, and I think it's really great. I don't have AFib. I just kind of like to play with this stuff. But I do have friends with AFib, and they recommend it highly. Tell me about your bike. Is it okay?
Yeah, I've got a $500 e-bike, and I've got I ordered two of these batteries, and these batteries for these things are like $180 a piece. Ordered two, and somebody sent me 10, so I'm hooked up with batteries. I can do I can do a couple hundred miles.
Nice. They're rechargeable, right? You're not throwing them out.
Yeah.
No,
they're 30.
Who makes this bike? $500? I've never heard of an e-bike that cheap. Who makes it?
So this is a Chinese Anchier, A-N-C-H-E-R-E, and it's China branding. It's you're going to have to do a little babying with it, but I've got two of them.
And, boy, for that price, it's fantastic. I rode my e-bike to work. I love my e-bike. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah, the batteries are $180 out of that 500, you know?
Yeah, so, no, that's why, that's exactly right. That's why they're expensive.
So I customized the tires and the seat and a few other things on there. And
I bet your doctor loves the idea, because even with an e-bike, you're certainly getting exercise. I turn my pedal assist down to one and ride it just to get a little exercise on the way in.
Well, my doctor's actually not too happy about it. I'm visually challenged.
Oh, yikes.
And they don't really like me riding.
No, either. I don't. Stay anyway. Safe, Joe. Hey, I got to run, but stay safe.
Okay, thanks, Leo.
Get better, sir. Bye. It's time for Sam Abulsamid. He is our car guy. Hello, Sammy.
Hello, Leo. How are you this week?
I am doing great. You look so good with that professional PR40 microphone in front of you. That's nice. I'm glad we got you that. Welcome to the show.
As it sounds good.
Sounds
That's
fantastic. So what do you want to talk about today? I see you have a motorcycle behind you. Would that be an electric motorcycle?
That would be an electric motorcycle. Continuing part of the theme from your last caller there, and this was something that came up as a question last week at the end of our segment. I think it might have been in the chat room, or maybe you brought it up. I can't remember who, but somebody asked about the Harley-Davidson Livewire, which is what you see over my shoulder
here. It looks like a real bike, which is interesting. It doesn't look – I thought maybe it looked like a Ninja or something. I mean, it doesn't look like a Harley, but it does look like a real bike.
Yeah, no, you're right. It doesn't look like a Harley for the most part, but it does. It is a cool looking bike. They actually had them on display at the New York E-Prix that was at a couple weeks ago, and they did the media rides with it the week before that. And they were doing some interesting demos at the race in New York. They had about half a dozen of them that were set up on little portable chassis dynos. So the back wheel was on a little dynamometer. So you could, once you filled out a bunch of paperwork to sign your life away, you could actually get on and go for a ride and see what it feels like to sit on it and ride. And this is Harley's first electric bike. It's not the first electric motorcycle out there. There's a number of them out there today. But it's the first one from a major motorcycle manufacturer. I think Zero Motorcycles is probably the big player in this space right now.
What is the difference between an electric motorcycle and an electric bicycle?
Well, there's no pedals on it, for one thing. So, you know, it's more, okay. more like driving a traditional motorcycle.
Yeah.
Riding traditional motorcycle in that respect. It's got a 15.5 kilowatt hour battery pack.
Well, that's a big battery. So that means it goes a long way.
Well, it depends. It's 105 horsepower motor, electric motor in there. And to answer somebody's question in the chat, yes, it is a belt drive. But, you know, keep in mind that, you know, because it's a motorcycle, you know, it doesn't have the aerodynamics of a car. So, you know, when you're riding down the road, especially at higher speeds, you're going to have quite a bit of drag. The official range, city riding range is 140 miles.
That's pretty good.
Which is pretty good. Yeah. On the highway, it's rated at 88 miles at highway speeds. From talking to a couple of people who did the media ride and who experienced it, you know, if you're going out on a country ride at, you know, fairly high speeds, you're probably going to get somewhere, you know, in the neighborhood of 80 to 90 miles of range.
Okay, but
which is
more to the point. What's the 0 to 60, and how fast will it go? 3 seconds.
Three seconds, 0 to 60.
Okay, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fairly typical for a motorcycle. I mean, in terms of its performance and its weight, it's about a 550-pound bike.
It's like a rocket. You're riding a rocket. You got a rocket between your legs. 3 seconds.
Well, that's why they call them road rockets.
And there's nowhere for your head. When you pin your head back, there's nowhere for it to go.
Well, you're leaning forward on this thing. It's a bike.
How do you keep the wheel on the ground?
That's a good question. You know, you can get the wheel off the ground.
This would be the guy where you'd see the video. First time ever he rode a Harley e-bike, and I'd wipe out immediately. Like, I'd get on it and I'd fall over. It'd be over. This is a death trap for Leo.
Well, all motorcycles can be considered death traps, especially in California where people are lane splitting.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, even after all these years of driving in California,
amazing,
I still get freaked
it?
Out when I look over
I
in the mirror
guy
in traffic and see somebody coming up beside me on a motorcycle.
Know. Well, so do you think this is something that, I mean, Harley's known, frankly, for the big noisy engine. Do you think this is something Harley riders will embrace?
That's a good question. I suspect traditional Harley riders probably won't be as interested in this bike just because, you know, it doesn't have that sound.
You can't wake up the neighborhood with it. In fact, I bet it. Is it silent?
It's not quite silent. You know, it's got some noise from the belt and everything. You know, there's a little bit of whine, but generally very quiet.
Is it made in America?
It is made in America.
Okay.
Yes.
So there you go.
I don't think Harley expects to sell that many of these. I mean, Harley's looking for a new kind of customer for this bike. You know, it's not necessarily going to be a traditional Harley rider because
it's pretty sweet looking. I mean, I think it looks.
It is a good looking bike. Yeah. Traditional Harley riders are, shall we say, getting more mature.
Yes.
You know, as is the case with many other traditional brands.
It kind of cracks me up because all the guys you see driving Mustangs, Corvettes, Harleys, they're all older gentlemen of my vintage, right? This was their dream car when they were 17, but they couldn't afford it till they were 65, and now they're riding around on these things. I saw a guy the other day on a Harley wearing leathers, looking sharp, big gray beard. He gets off the bike he's going to get something out of the back, and he can't really walk well. So he's taking little tiny steps, and I'm thinking, get your motor running, head out on the highway. Anyway.
Yeah, well, and therein lies the rub with this thing, you know, because Harley wants to attract a new kind of customer.
Yeah.
But like traditional Harleys, this one isn't going to be cheap.
Yeah.
$30,000.
Oh! That's how much my Chevy Bolt cost.
Yeah.
And I can sit inside it.
I don't think there's a federal tax credit for electric motorcycles.
There's not?
I don't believe so, no.
Why not?
I don't know.
Does it have room in the back for if you wanted to be an Uber driver? Could you put somebody in the back?
You can carry a passenger on the back.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah, you know, one of the guys I talked to that did the demo rides on it, you know, did carry somebody on the back, and it does work. You know, they won't be particularly comfortable, so I don't think most Uber passengers will really be interested in riding on this thing.
What about, it feels like this may be an electric glide or one of those motorcycle trikes would be good for this.
Yeah.
Like a bigger bike.
This certainly won't be the last electric Harley. Yeah. I think there will be more coming in the next few years, and I think we're going to see a lot more electric bikes from the other big traditional bike makers like BMW and Honda and Kawasaki and Suzuki. I think we're going to see a lot more electric bikes going forward, and especially as the performance gets better, the range gets better, and the cost starts to come down.
What's
a bit
charging like on an electric motorcycle? Do you charge it
with the same connector that you use on your Bolt, the 1772 connector, CCS connector. And the Harley does support DC fast charging, so you can give it a full charge in under an hour.
And you're going to see a lot of those all over the place now. That's the new thing.
And Harley has deals with Electrify America and ChargePoint to provide, I think you get 500 kilowatt hours of free charging when you buy a LiveWire.
Yeah, so Tesla brought back the free supercharging for Model S and X owners.
Yeah, I think sales have been lagging on those too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Sam, for giving me another way to, you know, kind of injure myself.
Well, it's okay. I'm sure Lisa wouldn't approve of this. She might want to ride it.
Honestly, that's the thing that scares me. I would never ride this, but I could see Lisa wanting this for sure. Honey, we could trade in the Bolt for a Harley. What about it, honey? Should probably do it too. Sam Abulsamid.
And one of the neighbors.
That's right. Because we have a friend who pulls up in his big old Harley, and it certainly wakes up the neighborhood. Sam is a principal researcher at Navigant Research and does a really, really good podcast called Wheel Bearings at Wheel Bearings Media, wheelbearings.media. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No more oil leaks.
No, definitely.
We told Mike he had to stop parking his – he's a car guy, all his cars in our driveway because we always knew when he was visiting. A little black spot on the drive. I like my e-bike. 20 miles an hour. That's it. It's safe.
To go a couple miles, from work to the –
Zero to 60 in never is the, which is what I need, to be honest with you.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. The Tech Guy Podcast today brought to you by LastPass. I'm such a big LastPass fan. I use it everywhere. It's the first thing I install when I set up a new computer, whether it's a desktop, a laptop, even a smartphone, because LastPass has apps for everything. Windows, Mac, I use it on Linux, I use it on Android, I use it on iOS. And why is it the first app? Because I'm going to need my password vault to install all the other apps. It saves me so much time. The other day I was setting up a new Linux computer, and I couldn't get LastPass on it until I got Firefox on it, and I couldn't get Firefox on it until I could remember my Firefox password. I went and looked at my Firefox password. It was like 800 characters. Made me sad. Put LastPass on first, Leo. LastPass is an award-winning security solution, helps millions of individuals, thousands of businesses navigate their online lives easily and securely. It is the number one most preferred password manager, not just at work, but at home. In fact, I've been using it for almost a decade, since they started. Recently, they expanded. We use the LastPass Enterprise at work, and we're really excited about the new solutions for business from LastPass, a brand new business lineup with some really great new features that are going to improve security across your company and this seems to be impossible, right? Make it easier for your users. Usually we say, well, there's a trade-off between convenience and security. Maybe not. LastPass has figured out some really good solutions. Take a look at LastPass Enterprise. That's the business password manager we use here. It now has something called single sign-on, which means no more password at all. You just say, yes, I signed on your phone, and boom, you're in. And it's for 1,200-plus SAML-integrated apps, each with its own getting started guide, so it's easy to set up If your IT department is using LastPass, they're going to be thrilled about this. And if they're not, get them to use LastPass with single sign-on. And you'll be thrilled. Users are thrilled because it just eliminates passwords entirely. And it's more secure. It's like, what a win-win. They also are using something new called MFA. Now, you know about 2FA, right? Two-factor authentication. MFA is an adaptive solution that leverages things like your biometrics, your face, your fingerprint, plus contextual factors. This is the multi-factor, like your IP address, your location, to verify you are who you say you are. It's better than two-factor, but it's easier, too. So it's just awesome. And for the IT department, it's all in an easy-to-manage dashboard for admins, and you get oversight control. You will know everything. I mean, it gives you granular control to know which apps are in use, which passwords are in use, how much usage. LastPass calls it LastPass Identity. It's a combination of LastPass Enterprise, the single sign-on, LastPass MFA, and it is something that will make your users happy, make your IT department happy, and make you more secure. We use LastPass Enterprise at Twit. We're going to be turning this on immediately. I'm very excited. And I think you will be too. And if you're a home user, don't forget LastPass Premium for personal use, LastPass Families for your family. That's what we use at home. There's a solution for everybody, and it's very affordable. LastPass is bridging the gap between passwords and the future, which is identity, by making access and authentication simple and secure, both for IT and end users. Thousands of businesses are signing up for LastPass. They're loving it. They're trusting it. We've been using it for a couple of years now. I've been using it at home forever. LastPass.com/Twit to find out more. Thank you, LastPass, for supporting Twit. They're a big supporter of what we do, and we are a big supporter of what they do. So it's kind of a nice mutual admiration society. Help us out by using this special URL, LastPass.com/Twit. Leo Laporte. It is Tech Guy time, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, line two, Tom, in the city of the broad shoulders, Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Leo.
Was that? Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Was that a chair squeaking? Is your chair squeaky, or is that a small animal in your house?
Well, I'm 70. Maybe it's me.
It must be you creaking. No, I love it.
Yeah. No, it is my chair.
Really. Yeah, I love it. So when I picked up, obviously you had been leaning back in it and you sat forward very quickly and it sounded like a yelp. So that's what scared me.
You got that right.
What can I do for you, Tom?
Well, LTL4TC.
LTL4TC. You got me.
Long time listener, fourth time caller.
Oh, I like it. LTL4TC. I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
That's our acronym of the week.
Yeah, but next time I call you, it'll be different.
It'll be 5TC.
Oh. Now I know why you're the tech guy.
Why, Tom? Why? Tell me, because I don't know.
Because you were able to do that in your head so quickly.
Oh, it's good. No, it's because of what it says on my checks. I make it out to the tech guy so I can't cash him. What can I do for you, Tom?
Well, I just want to add is that in June, I looked down at my Apple Watch, and it said that my heart rate was 196.
You're dead. You died.
Well, pretty darn close.
Wow.
So I did the ECG, and it said it couldn't do it at that high a heart rate. What? So I went to the emergency room.
Good.
And they kept me, and they told me I had AFib.
Oh, my God. It saved your life. The Apple Watch saved you. It's another one of those Apple Watch saved my life stories. Do you think you would have known there was something wrong? I mean, you must have felt weird.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I could feel something, but I really didn't know, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe I just thought I had too much coffee or something. But
oh, I am
no,
so
was,
glad.
There it is.
I am so. And, you know, I've been skeptical of this feature of the Apple Watch because many cardiologists have said, well, you know, when you do a real ECG, it's, I think, 12 or 16 leads. They put them all over your chest. This is essentially only two inputs. The watch is on the wrist. That's one input. And then you have to touch the stem of the watch while the ECG program is running. And so it's two leads, which means it's less accurate. But I got to say, I love that thing where it will say your heart rate is high and you're not doing anything. That's one of the warnings in there. I think you have to turn that on. I know I did on mine. And that's I think that's really useful. Doing that ECG, if you are in fibrillation, what is it? Arterial fibrillation? Well, I can't remember. But if you're in AFib, that will at least give you some data that you can send to your doc. And then, of course, they would say, oh, get in here because we want to see if you're all right. And I think a lot of doctors say, well, we're going to see a lot of false positives. But many more say, no, you know what? That's good. And you're a perfect example, Tom. That's good. Even if there had been nothing wrong with you, you know.
Well, and it's always also telling me all the time, asking me if I've fallen.
Yeah.
And luckily, I haven't.
Well, it's that chair. You got over. It's that chair. I'm telling you.
Well, when I lean over, like to feed my cat,
it thinks you fell.
I stand up, and it goes, "Are you all right?"
Oh, that's interesting.
I go, no, I'm fine.
Yeah, I turned on fall detection too, because as we get older, it's really important, right? These things are valuable.
Yeah.
And one of the things fall detection will do is say, "If you've fallen, shall I call for help?" I think the Apple Watch is increasingly, at first I thought it was kind of a gizmo, a gadget, not something super serious, but it's. I wear it all the time now, and I think it's increasingly valuable. And man, what a great story, Tom. That is that is amazing.
Well, I had the Apple Watch too, and then when this one came out with these features, I said, well, you know, I've got to upgrade, that's for sure. And I'll probably have to do that again in the future.
It saved your life. What did the doc say?
Well, it was kind of funny. He was impressed, but I'm in there and he goes, well, you know, that's all impressive and all that, but you don't mind if we actually stick these things on your chest and use our equipment.
Yeah, would you mind? Yeah. Yeah. No, but then he said, oh, it was right. You do have atrial fibrillation, right? He said it was right. Yeah. So it saved your life. It told you go to the hospital. I think that's really neat.
So cool.
So what can I do for you?
The reason I called, I want to know if you plan to buy an Apple product soon. The reason I ask is because I need a new iMac and a new Apple TV.
And Leo always buys it. Yeah, right before the new one comes out, right?
Right. They bring out a new model immediately. So I need to know if you're going to do that.
There is some truth to this, by the way. I bought the Cube. Remember that crazy Cube computer? I bought it, got it home, looked on the news, fired it up, looked on the news, and it said Apple discontinues the Cube. That day, I was probably the last guy to buy it. And then, of course, many times I have bought. But I've learned to wait. And there are certain now Apple's a little more regular in their release. So I've learned a little bit. The answer is yes, but I'm going to wait because next month I expect to see, we know we're going to see two new iPhones. I think three, actually. The successor to the XR, XS, and XS Max. Those will come out, and my prediction is September 10th because that's the second Tuesday of September, and typically that's when Apple does these announcements. Usually when they make those announcements, they're available the following Friday, or at least available for order the following Friday, and they come later in the month. So, yeah, I know I'm going to be buying a new iPhone. The other question is, we've heard rumors there'll be two new iPads. We've already seen the entries in the databases for the European and Middle East, kind of the FCC registration database where they get them tested. We've already seen two new numbers for iPads. We think they'll be low-cost iPads, not iPad Pros. And then there's my favorite rumor, and if this is true, I will buy it, is a new MacBook Pro. We've also seen model numbers for that. And that MacBook Pro, according to Ming-Chi Kuo and other fairly reliable rumor guys, will have a 16-inch screen in the 15-inch size MacBook Pro. In other words, they'll get rid of the frames, the bezels, and make a bigger screen. That's nice, but the thing that really intrigues me is there's also a rumor Apple will finally abandon this butterfly keyboard that it's been getting so much heat for. They're unreliable. They're hard to type on. I just don't physically like how they feel. They're very short travel. And the rumor is they're going to go back to an older scissor key style switch, which would be, for me, a good reason to go buy a new MacBook. So I'm waiting to see if that happens. If that happens, it can't happen later than October, I don't think. You don't really want to release a product that late in the year. I'm thinking either Apple's going to do a September iPhone announcement and an October iPad MacBook Pro announcement, Or, and they've been doing this lately, maybe just slip the MacBook Pro out. They've been kind of, the last few MacBook announcements have just been in press releases. No big party or anything. So, yeah, in fact, the answer is yes. But I would wait. I would wait till Leo buys.
What do you think about the Apple TV? Because I've got one of the old ones, and I can't even stream on it anymore.
No, you need the new one.
I know they're bringing out this new Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, but that's just software. I think that they released the 4K Apple TV not so long ago, and I don't see any reason for them to upgrade that. So
I thought it might be part of a big package or something.
Yeah. Well, what we think is there'll be software pushed out to the Apple TV, the iPhone. Macintosh will also have an Apple TV Plus app. They already, in fact, in the new version of Catalina of Mac OS has an Apple TV app. There are also, and this is something really unusual for Apple, they've already pushed out updates to Samsung TVs, Sony TVs. A number of them will have Apple TV features in there. So I suspect that's it. I don't see a new Apple TV platform. I see no need for it. But I do, you're right, they will announce sometime this year their new TV Plus product. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I see no reason for a new Apple TV. They're not, that isn't a big product for them. So I think that you need a new Apple TV. Now's the time to get it. And by the way, I think you could get the less expensive, the 32 gig one. I don't see any reason to get the 64 gig one, honestly.
Well, that's good to know. And do you have any feeling about the iMac? Because my iMac's 2012, and I can't even put Mojave on it.
That's actually a great question. They did the iMac Pro a couple of years ago, right? That was $5,000.
Yeah, I can't afford
that. No, that's crazy. Feels like they should be. I think they slipstreamed iMacs, new iMacs this year, right? I think they updated the iMacs with, you could get more memory in them and in March. So I don't see that happening this year. I think they did it. I think the new iMacs, which they say, Apple says, has a 2x performance boost. I think these are the new iMacs. They came out in the spring. So up to i9 processors is very fast. New Vega graphics options. These are... They're expensive, not as expensive as the iMac Pro. So I think it might be time. You're kind of on the edge. 2012 is not that long ago, but in the next couple of years, you're going to want a new iMac. They just updated them in March. I don't see any more updates this year, but I could, of course, be completely.
Well, as I said, it won't. I couldn't even put Mojave on it. So now,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though I have 21s, which are fairly inexpensive with 6-core processors. That should make a big difference. And, of course, the 27, which goes up to 8 cores now. So that is a pretty big upgrade. And the Vega. Okay. And the Vega.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty big upgrade. Those displays on the iMac are gorgeous, too. You'll love the new displays, I think.
So, yeah, I've got the 27 now, so I'm looking forward to the Retina for sure.
Sorry to spend all your money, Tom.
Hey, I'm retiring, so
nice.
I've still got it.
When's your retirement date?
October 4th, 10/4.
Oh, man. I bet you're really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I'm moving to Florida.
All right. Why not?
What's the law?
No more Chicago winters. That's why.
Oh, man. I've had it.
Say goodbye to the Hawk. Oh, man.
Yeah. This last Chicago winter is my last Chicago winter.
Awesome. I'm so happy for you.
Hey, as long as I've got your ear, yes. I want to thank you. Years ago, you recommended that person join a Mac user group.
Yes.
And I did here in Chicago. It was called Trow, the rest of us.
Oh, nice.
And I'm still a member.
Nice.
It has been such a great organization. And, you know, we have guest speakers. We've had Adam Angst on there.
Oh, I love live, Adam, as you know.
And on video.
Nice.
And your own Andy Anatko.
Oh, wonderful.
Among others. And I'm wondering if we could possibly get Leo Laporte to do a little video.
Oh, you bet. Absolutely.
How would I do that?
Send an email to, Let me think where the best place to send an email would be. I love your chair. You got to bring your chair. Send an email. Send it to Leo at leoville.com. I'll look for it. I get so much email there, I often miss it. But I will look for it. And if you don't get a response from me as quickly, I'll do it again. Actually, yeah, do that. I was going to say send it to my producer or something. But send it to me. I don't want to burden
you. Okay. That would be great.
Thanks, Tom. I'd love to do it. As long as I can do it by Skype, that's easy.
And we've had Bert Monroy both live and on Skype,
Bert
too.
Bert is one of my favorite people in the world. Oh, I love
him. Awesome.
Yeah. So well, that's great.
Well, thank you so much for everything, Leo.
Thank you, Tom. It's always my pleasure. Thank you.
And I'll get out the WD-40. Just thank you.
No. We like the squeak. Keep the squeak. Take care, Tom.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, I know where it goes, and I see that, too. That might have been a better spot, actually, but that's all right. I'll keep my eye open. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. Yes, I can go on and on. Lots of things. Here's the rule. If it's got a chip in it, if there's technology involved, we'll talk about it. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And if you're outside that area, you still can call. In fact, we get callers from all over the world. All you have to do is use Skype out, something like that, to call. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techilabs.com. That's free, always open, and we've got audio and video from previous shows there, all 1,614. We also have answers to the questions and a place for you to add your thoughts. techilabs.com. Back to the phones we go. Rich, Worcester, Mass. Hello, Rich.
How you doing, Leo? This is my second call today to you. I unfortunately have Spectrum for a landline service, and it runs on Wi-Fi, and it dies all the time.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm glad you got back in.
I didn't think I'd be able to do it, but I got you on speed dial, so that works.
Great.
Leo, here's my question for you. I listen to a lot of that YouTube with all these people out there doing the First Amendment thing. We talked about 6 weeks or so about this. And I found that I purchased back in 2007 a Sony Handycam with a 3-inch disc.
Goodness. Yeah, those were the, what they call them, the Mavics, I think, something like that.
I'm not positive which
one. They used floppy disks, or were they special disks?
Floppy disks.
Floppy disks, yep.
Good for 1 hour. And I think I paid around $1,200 for it. And right now it's got a value of maybe $200. It's been sitting in a box downstairs, and I finally stumbled across it, and I said, wow.
Then I can't believe it's worth $200. Who's going to spend that? It must be nostalgia. Honestly, how much? First of all, the picture can't be very big if it has to fit on a floppy.
I have no idea what it does.
Like 640 by 480, because the floppy only holds 1.44 megabytes. So that's my... 1080p. Oh, wow.
That's what it says.
Very good.
I wish listened to YouTube, and they would give me all these specs on it. I didn't know you could find this information there, but I guess you can. Anyway, my main concern is using that, plus I have the iPhone 6S. I listen to these guys that are doing these videos with the police and blah, 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 and they're able to live stream. Now, do I need just the...
you can do it with your iPhone. You can't do it with the Mavica, I promise you.
But, I listen to a lot of this stuff, and some of it makes a lot of sense. There's one guy in particular. He goes by the name of Furry Potato. He's a character. He just got arrested. He was
doing. I get what you're saying. He's taking pictures of law enforcement doing whatever it is he doesn't like.
Exactly.
Yeah, and of course you're protected. You can do this. Although, I think you're taking your chances. I see. I'm at his Furry Potato site. Yeah, you want to do that? You want to be a civil rights advocate?
Why not? You said your son went to school to be a journalist.
We talked about this before. Remember that? He was taking pictures of protests in Boulder for the school paper, and the police said, give me, we want your camera. We want those pictures. He said, no. They said, well, sit there until you change your mind. And he sat there, but for a while, and after a while, he said, heck with this. You have no right. Are you arresting me? Are you detaining me? You have no right to these pictures. He stood up for his rights, and I was very proud of him. That is a First Amendment right.
Hey, that's exactly what, but a lot of these shenanigans are going on, and I don't know what they're all caused from. I mean, the real world is full of crime today anyway. It's crazy. You know, I mean, no matter who.
Well, that's the thing. Here's the thing I would say. Don't interfere with law enforcement. Don't get in their way. That is illegal. You know, don't mess with them. Nowadays, many law enforcement officers are wearing body cameras and are happy to be doing so, and I think that's a very good thing.
Well, Furry Potato tells me that I should have a body camera as well because there's more protection.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're shoving a camera in a law enforcement officer's face, he's not going to take well to that. He can't stop you, but,
Leo, you know, it's public.
Yeah, it's public, but...
Why did he get in my face?
I agree. No, I know, and I don't disagree with you. I just say, you're cruising for a bruising, as my father used to say.
Being Canadian like I am,
You're a Canadian. No wonder. No wonder.
Well, you are, too.
You come from a country where they respect laws. No wonder.
But anyway,
so you could do this with a, you're right. You could do it with a, any internet-connected device can stream. And there, so your phone for sure, not the Mavica, obviously. You could wear a GoPro. There are one of the things about the GoPros or any of these little action cameras, they're small. You can wear them in a variety of places. You might want to wear them on a helmet if you're going to do this. And then you connect it to your phone, and then with the GoPro app, your phone will then stream it to the internet. You can stream it to Facebook Live or somewhere else. So you're absolutely right. As long as you got to get a camera that will connect to your phone, and as long as that phone can then stream out, which it can, YouTube Live, Facebook Live, Livestream.com, Mixer, which is Microsoft's, Twitch. There are quite a few places now that you can stream live video to, and all you'll need is, the ability to do that from your phone. It's a little tricky because your phone is running the GoPro app, right? So you'll only be able to stream to whatever the GoPro app allows you to stream to. There's other similar small action cameras, the Yi Cam from Xiaomi. There's another good one. It'll use its software to stream.
What about the there's another one out there. It goes for $600. It's a P900. I think it's a Nikon P900. It goes for $600. Best Buy.
I don't think you need anything that good, honestly, but I guess the better the quality, the better. Yeah, this is what they call their cool picks.
Right.
Some of these point and shoots do have streaming capability. So let me just look what the streaming capability is of this. Yeah, built-in Wi-Fi. Probably what you would still need to do is have a Nikon app on your phone and use your phone's internet connectivity, because what they don't have is their own built-in internet connectivity. You understand?
Right.
They have Wi-Fi, which means they can get to the phone at a high speed. That's good. But then the phone is the thing that needs to pass it along. And I would look and see what the capabilities of the software are. You can't run two programs at the same time on your phone. So I would doubt that the Nikon software that you would need to connect to the camera would also have streaming capability.
Okay, that's what I needed to know, because I'm definitely going to go out there and do this here. I mean, it.
Good. Tell me what your channel is when you set it up. How about
if
fuzzy?
You don't find me 6 feet under, big shot
now,
or whatever.
You know, it depends where you are, right?
True.
Yeah, and where are you? You going to do this in Worcester?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I think Worcester cops might be a little tougher than you think.
I
grew up in Providence. I kind of think I may not want to do this in Worcester. Why don't you go up to Boston? They're much nicer up there.
No, they're not. They're worse.
I respect this. And honestly, I've seen videos of police officers, rousting people inappropriately or even illegally. And so this is and we've seen a lot of things from body cams, shocking things that are sad. You know, we think, of course, of the Garner and others. And so I think that I understand why you would want to do this. I would say learn your rights, exercise caution, be polite, and get a camera that can stream to the internet.
And also listen to Tyrone. He's the New England Truth. He's out of Connecticut. He's pretty out there, too. He's an attorney, and he's not afraid to challenge anybody. Right. He goes right at them.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can read your rights and read the law and all that stuff, but you are on the street. I think this is great, Rich. Good for you. Good for you. Yeah, I'm the tech guy. I'm not the law guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Line 4, Bill in Athens, Ohio. Hello, Bill.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Thank you for calling.
I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
I'm switching from Windows 10 to Debian.
Yay!
I've got everything I need on Debian.
Yay. One by one, we're converting the world to Linux users.
I enjoy Debian really well.
My
Me only
too.
Concern is right now, I can't sync my iPhone to a Rhythmbox. And that's I like to download your podcast so I can listen to them on the road.
Well, first of all, you could do that on the iPhone with the podcast app. You don't need to sync it at all.
Okay.
That's what I would recommend. This is an interesting question. Yeah, I don't think there's any iTunes analog in the Linux world. Did you use iTunes on Windows?
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, the good news from my point of view is there are podcast apps galore for all the mobile devices, Android and iOS. And for the most part, nowadays, that's how people do it. So there's Pocket Casts, which is a great one. Apple has its own podcast app. If you just listen to the audio, which most people do, Overcast is an excellent choice. There are free ones. There are paid ones. There's all kinds. Start with Apple's podcasts. Search for the podcast you want. All of my podcasts are under the company name, which is This Week in Tech or TWIT.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also search for the Tech Guy if that's the one you want. And it'll just download it automatically. You can even set it on most of the apps to only do it when you're home, not to use up your precious LTE bandwidth, but to do it on Wi-Fi. So, frankly, that eliminates that whole sync thing.
Okay. Well, I don't use the cell phone only when I go out for driving, so I'm not a big cell phone user. So that's why I sort of like to download them on the computer then at my convenience. I can.
Yeah, that's the old kind of old school iPod way of doing things.
I'm sort of an old school kind of
person. So there are ways to do it. In fact, Dr. Mom has found an article on Instructables. Sync iPad iPhone with Linux, Debian, which is what you're using, or Ubuntu. You're going to install something, well, first a library, which is lib mobile device, and you're going to put that on there. And then there's, it's kind of complicated, but there is a YouTube video. We'll put a link to this.
Okay, great. Outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little geeky. I hate saying it because I don't want people to think, oh, well, gosh, if I'm going to have to install special libraries and tools to use Linux with my iPhone, I give up. It doesn't. You're right. There's no iTunes, but I feel like there's ways to do this kind of stuff. And nowadays, honestly, even Apple doesn't really expect you to connect your iPhone to a computer. That's kind of old school. In fact, get ready because I think it's just a matter of time before Apple eliminates all connectors on the iPhone entirely.
That's good news.
Yeah. Then I don't know how you'll charge. I guess it'll all be wireless charging and wireless connections and wireless, you know, Wi-Fi copying and that kind of thing.
Okay, well.
But here's an article, and thank you, Dr. Mom, for passing that along. We'll post that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. James is working right now to get that up there.
Outstanding. I appreciate all your help, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening. Enjoy Debian.
Thank you very much.
I should explain what he's doing, because it sounds scary. And I think a lot of you might want to even think about this come January when Windows 7, if you're still using Windows 7, will no longer be supported by Microsoft. That doesn't just mean you can't call Microsoft and say, hey, I have a problem. That means they won't be making security fixes for it. So it will become increasingly dangerous to use Windows 7 if you use the internet at all. And so a lot of people, I mean, Microsoft obviously would like you to upgrade to Windows 10. And their attitude on that is, well, that's the last time. You don't have to do it anymore. We're just going to twice a year update Windows 10. There's not going to be a Windows 11. They've said this. I find this hard to believe, but they've said this. And that's it. So one more upgrade. That's all we ask. But I think a number of people are looking at other options, and especially if you have older hardware. Linux is a free operating system that's very, very much like Windows. I think in many respects superior to Windows. It's my preferred operating system. I prefer it over Mac OS. I prefer it over Windows. And yeah, you might say, well, Leo, you're a geek. You're a big fat geek, so it's okay. But maybe, what about me? I'm just a normal person. I think you're right that, at least in the past, using the Linux operating system has required some technical skills, and I just kind of confirmed that by saying, well, you got to download libgutils. It's a very... But don't you understand how it is we use Linux? But it's, in fact, in most cases, not. And the version of Linux I recommend is actually based on Debian. Debian is a pure version of Linux, community run. There's no commercial enterprise involved with it at all. Along comes Mark Shuttleworth, internet millionaire. He said, I think Linux is important. I want to support it. He created a company, a business called Ubuntu, and took the Debian, you can do this in the Linux world, it's encouraged, in fact, took the Debian version of Linux, added some frills and bells and whistles, made it a little easier to use, and called that Ubuntu Linux. But it's based on Debian. The Linux I use is based on that, which is called Pop OS, and it's from a company called System 76. They make Linux laptops and desktop computers. This is the version of Linux they've created for their hardware. But I have found, after a lot of trial and error, it's the easiest to install. It works with the most, with a broad variety of hardware. You usually don't have any issues with it. It's based on Ubuntu, it's based on Debian, so you get the benefits of the work those folks have done. Non-commercial. There's no, you know, one of, sometimes people who use Linux are pretty picky about, you know, companies making money off of it. Pop OS is free, free to download, free to install, and has no commercial elements in it. So I find it a very useful Linux, and I end up putting it everywhere. So you can search for Pop OS or go to system76.com if you want to. You download it, put it on a USB key. And honestly, I don't think it's as hard as some people. I think in many ways it's easier to install than Windows. Honestly, there's a lot less fuss. It's more secure. It's, more, in my opinion, more reliable. And here's the thing. There's 45,000 applications available for Debian. 45,000. So it's not like there's not a lot of choices when it comes to the kinds of things you use a computer for. I've been very happy with it. If you're more geeky, more kind of hardcore, and you want something a little bit more configurable, the other Linux I recommend is Manjaro, M-A-N-J-A-R-O. It's a really nicely designed Linux, but it requires a little more expertise, but then it gives you a little more flexibility. Our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, just around the corner. We're going to talk about photography. We've got a new assignment, too. We'll get you to work on that. And then we'll get back to the calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Mama, don't take my Kodachrome.
It's time for the photo guy, Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. Chris is my personal guru when it comes to all things photographic, both film and digital. But
as if you would listen to me.
Well, I do. No, I do. In fact, I listened a little too well a couple of weeks ago when you mentioned that Sony had released an updated version of its A7R camera.
Oh, I saved you a lot of money there.
You did, because I had ordered a different camera.
Because you canceled your Leica.
And I canceled it, and I got, and I ordered the A7R Mark IV. See, I have the two. And what's that?
This is what I've been shooting with this weekend.
That's a Minolta.
An X-T7. I think in the U.S. it used to be sold as the X-T11.
Is that a film camera?
Of course it is.
A film camera? This is the Tech Guy Show. Where do you get film?
I want to go away from the tech, even from film, for this segment today.
Okay.
But I was with other photographers on the weekend, and it was kind of a fun little social event. And I decided to limit myself, do some creative limitation: one camera, one roll of film for the entire weekend. And I still haven't filled it completely, so that was the right choice. But one thing last night, I noticed something about the light. And you know how the different seasons deal differently, how we deal differently with photography in the different seasons. If you look at fall, the fall colors, we all love those. When the mornings get later, the evenings get earlier, and the light is kind of really interesting. There's some great photography to be had. In winter, a lot of us don't do a lot of photography because it's well, it's too cold and the light is kind of bland sometimes. Then when spring comes, we shoot more, we go out, there's the motivation comes back. And then there's summer, which we have right now. Mm-hmm. And we have another fight to fight in summer, and that's the harsh light, right? If you go out during the daytime, the sun is up in the sky, and it just, in photos sometimes, it looks too harsh. It's too contrasty. So I have three things that we can do when we face that in summer, because I don't think the harsh light is an excuse to not take any photos. And the first one is, of course, we all know that, go in the shade, right? Don't shoot in the bright sun. Find something that takes the sun away, under a tree, behind a house, somewhere. Some of the most beautiful photos I've taken during midday in summer, but not in the sun. So that's kind of the first thing. The second is, of course, use the golden hours, right? We have in the morning, we have after sunrise, we have, depending on your latitude, 1 or 2 hours in which the sun is relatively low. And that gives us this warm golden light. And the same in the last couple of hours before sunset. Again, if you are higher up north, that will take much longer. If the closer you get to the equator, the quicker that time goes. But in our latitude, it's about an hour and a half, maybe, where we have really beautiful light. Now, the early golden hour, the one in the morning, in summer, that's the one I rarely hit because it's really early, right?
Sun comes I'm so up. Glad to hear you say that. All the pro photographers I know, they're up at 4 a.m. and they're I'm not going to do that.
I do that with when I'm out on a photo tour with a group. That easy, totally easy. But on my own, it's a bit of a difficult thing. And then the last one is, and that's what I ran into yesterday, and I just realized again how beautiful that is what we call the blue hour. And the blue hour happens after sunset. Before the light is gone.
So you have the golden hour or the magic hour. That's before sunset and or just before. Right. After the sun goes down, then things turn blue.
It takes a while. Again, last night here in Germany, I think it was around 10 o'clock, 9:45.
But it's the summer,
o'clock.
Right?
So it's the summer. So there's no reason not to go out late to take photos because we were in a place.
It's not dark yet. It's dusk.
It's dusk. It's going on to darkness. And what you will see at one point, especially when you have these, when you have old buildings, I mean, we were in an old German city with medieval buildings and castles and things. So those are lit up with mostly warm light. So they have like some sodium lights pointing to them. So they're more on the yellow side. But then at one point, you have this beautiful balance between the foreground, the lit buildings in the foreground, and the sky turning dark blue. So at the moment, or the time, which again, depending on your latitude, might just be 10, 15 minutes, when the sky turns blue and it's about, it balances nicely with a more yellow, warmish foreground, that's when you get some really, really amazing shots. So it was really worth being out there. And again, last night around 10 o'clock, we went out. Some of us had tripods with us, and if you don't have a tripod, even most modern smartphones can take some great photos in this situation. But of course, if you want to get a bit more technical, then a tripod is a good idea, or lean the camera on something, get a bit of a longer exposure. If you can typically let the camera do the exposure for you in that situation, especially if you have lit buildings in the foreground. If you want to get a bit more specific, then it's probably a good idea to exposure compensate a bit downwards. So -1, -2 exposure compensation, just some experiments there. And yeah, that results in some really spectacular photos because that warm foreground and this blue sky is such a strong color contrast, which makes it a really interesting photo. So If you go on Flickr or, for example, where we also do our assignments, and just type in the search box blue hour, and you will immediately see a whole bunch of these kind of photos. It's really interesting what you can get there.
So you're
when's
going
the last
for
time
that?
You've been out so late?
Oh, I, you know, I'm in bed by then. No, I'm not.
It's worth, at this time of the year, it's really worth staying up a bit.
So, but it sounds like you're looking for a source that's lit.
It helps. I mean, in a bigger, it works in bigger cities. If you have some bigger buildings with a lot of lit up windows at night, or you might have a monument that is lit by a light in the foreground at night. These kind of things, depending on where you live, you might even have a castle or something. And the moment that balances out with the sky, it turns quite magic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, so instead of taking a cityscape at night, for instance, where the sky's black, you take it when it's just kind of shortly after sunset and you get an interesting mix because you can still see the outlines of the... Yeah, I'm looking at blue hour photos from Flickr. I'm getting what you're saying now, yeah.
And if you get a few clouds in the sky, it'll be even more interesting, more interesting.
What's nice about it is it has a definite sense of place and time. I mean, you kind of know when you look at it, oh, yeah, I know that feeling. You know, when the sun has gone down and people are starting to go out for the evening, there's this kind of magic. Here, I think this looks like it's in maybe London or somewhere, and it's just beautiful. Yeah, love it. What is our assignment, Chris? We're on what letter? E?
D. We're on E. Electric is the current assignment. And we already have a few interesting ones, but I think we're still about 3 weeks out. So electric photos.
Electric. And I forgot to ask you, but how many megapixels on that Minolta film camera?
Well, it depends on how well you scan it. So I take photos of the negatives with a macro lens.
What?
So it has the same amount of megapixels that my digital camera has. So.
Can you see grain in the film?
Of course, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't mind a little grain. Grain's okay. Chris Marquardt, find his great photo workshops to discover the top floor. He has a great book on film photography, wide-angle photography. That's all there. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Awesome. Yeah, that's inspiring. I've done a little, I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I've done a little blue hour photography in Petaluma.
And if you bring down the exposure just a little bit of negative exposure compensation, those photos will be magic. I mean, you still have to compose them well and
the
camera won't do that for you.
That's always the case, yeah.
The camera won't do that for you, but really, I mean, I've different parts of the world have different blue hours. Up in Norway, it goes on for 2 hours up in the northern latitudes, and you have so much time finding interesting things.
I have some amazing blue hour photos from Norway because the light is so interesting there.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's that
orange teal look that we also see in a lot of film posters.
Orange teal,
and they do that because it's just it's a very visceral thing. It's a very pleasing thing to look at.
Nice. Oh, as always, you're quite inspiring. You make me want to go out and take pictures, and then I realize I'll have to put some pants on, and I give up.
Okay, next time we'll talk about some at-home photography that you can do without any pants.
No pants photography. Now there you got me there.
There we go.
Now I'm ready. I'm looking through my Flickr's. You know what I did? I made a mistake. At one point, I imported all my Instagram shots into Flickr, which I guess I'm glad because I have those. But
yeah.
It kind of clogs them up now.
But now, it's all mixed up between the good ones and the...
Yeah.
The others. I know exactly what you mean.
I gotta do some organizational stuff at some point. I'm glad I take pictures though. I have to look at these once in a while and remind myself it's good to have this record.
Someone actually told me that a while ago on a workshop. He said the main reason I take pictures is because at one point my memory will go.
Yeah.
And then I have this database to look back through and remember.
All the good times. Yeah.
So there is another reason to take pictures.
That's a very good reason. Yeah. Yeah, it is for me now already. That's basically, that's what I already have.
But that's hopefully not the main reason.
I was thinking our last... video store in Petaluma is closing this month. There literally was a store that rented VHS tapes, and now it's DVDs, and they're closing because who needs it? But I was thinking the other day about going down to the Blockbuster to rent a movie, like, and looking through all the movies and trying to find a movie. That's just gone. It's gone from the American experience. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
That was fast.
I came across, I drove past a video rental store today.
Well.
And I was wondering how long that'll still be there.
It's just wild. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the number one accounting software in the cloud. I can recommend FreshBooks because it saved my bacon. See, I have what's left of it right here. It saved my... Somebody sent me a bacon air freshener. That seems like a bad idea. Unless you really like bacon. I like FreshBooks almost as much as I like bacon. That's how much I like FreshBooks. FreshBooks is... I started using it way back when, in about almost 15 years ago, when I was going to Canada to do call for help. I had to invoice them. In Canadian dollars, I also had to send in my expenses. It was a real pain. Amber MacArthur was the one who told me, oh, you should try this new Canadian startup. It's great. It's called FreshBooks. And man, I fell in love. Made it so easy to make my invoices. You can make them in any currency. You can send them off. But then FreshBooks, over the last decade, has improved it more and more and more. You still have that backbone of making your invoices. It also has time tracking. So if you bill by hours, you can do that. There's a FreshBooks app for all the mobile devices. Of course, there's FreshBooks on the desktop. So you could press a button. You could track. You'll get different prices for different projects, even with the same client. So it does that. It also, you can use the smartphone app to take a picture of your receipts and import it right into FreshBooks. So you can, it made it so easy for me to send my expenses out. And now, if you think about it, you've got all the pieces you need to do all your bookkeeping, but you don't have to do it. FreshBooks does it for you. They know what your accounts receivable are, all those invoices you sent out. They know which ones have been paid, which ones haven't. So do you. In fact, by the way, if they aren't getting paid on time, it will automatically send out reminders. They make it easy for clients to pay on time, by the way, because there's a button on the FreshBooks invoice that says pay me. And you can take, as soon as you're a FreshBooks client, online payments, which means your clients are going to pay. In fact, on average, they pay twice as fast. FreshBooks is used and trusted by small business owners in over 120 countries. Everything you need, does all your books for you, does your expenses. I think you're going to love it. And I want you to try it free for 30 days. Just go to FreshBooks.com/techguy. I want you to do that. You can go to FreshBooks.com. But if you go to /techguy, then they'll know you saw it here. That'll help the Tech Guy podcast. And if you would, when they say, how did you hear about us? Just say the Tech Guy. You'll get 30 days free. We'll get credit. That's nice. This thing, I can't recommend it more highly. Great customer service, phone, email, live chat. When it comes tax time, you'll be ready. Your accountant or bookkeeper or you will love the reports because it gives you full, complete reports. Everything you need, profit and loss. You can do fast and easy bank deposits, color-coded breakdown of spending. I can go on and on. You should try it. That's all. FreshBooks.com/techguy. Don't forget to put Tech Guy in the How Did You Hear About Us section. FreshBooks.com/TechGuy. Thank you, FreshBooks. Save my bacon. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Whoa. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. G. Scott, my buddy from Minnesota, is on the line. Hi, G. Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
I'm good. Let me just... get you off speaker here real quick.
I love G. Scott spends the summers in Minnesota, but then when the winter comes, he's smart. He leaves. Sure. Where do you migrate to? Southern California? I forgot.
We do Tahoe in the winter.
Tahoe.
And then northern Minnesota in the summer.
Yeah. Be wrong to do it the other way around. Life. Yeah. What can I do for you, G. Scott?
I got my Surface Studio back up and running. We talked a couple weeks ago, and I was swapping out the hard drive.
Did you do it?
Oh, I did, yep.
Good. And has it sped up? Did it make a difference?
Yeah, big difference.
It just makes me cry. Microsoft, seems to, they don't, you know, they're new to hardware. I know this sounds strange, but it is true. The hardware business, relatively new for Microsoft, and they keep stumbling in ways that I think are avoidable. So the Surface Studio, which I own the first generation. You got the first generation too, is that right?
Yep.
Beautiful screen, 28-inch screen, gorgeous. Just rich, deep touch screen, beautiful color. But instead of, they could have sold the screen by itself, but no. They only sell it as an all-in-one computer with a fairly anemic computer attached to it. It's basically a laptop. And the worst thing they did was they put in a Fusion Drive system with a small flash drive, SSD drive for speed, and a large storage drive. And what I did with our Surface Studio, and I gather you did too, G. Scott, is we replaced the two drives with two independent SSDs, one for the operating system, one for the data, and that made a huge difference. Those drives were 5,400 RPM. They were crazy slow, the spinning drive.
Yeah, and I went, you know, I went even overboard. I've got a 500 gig 970 Evo to replace the 64 gig.
They've gotten cheaper and cheaper, you know. I didn't do that because, this was 2 years ago. Well, what do you think? Was it a good brain surgery?
A good way to go, yep. I called even a longer time ago wondering about Excel on my 65. It seemed like maybe it was even I was getting things over the internet, not locally, but you said, no, that wasn't the case. I'm running these 20, 25 tab spreadsheets, you know, 3 seconds to open them instead of 30.
Oh, a factor of 10. And it's not because it's a faster processor or you have more RAM. It's faster drives.
Yeah. It's really working well. That said, I backed up everything. Now, with the Office 365, I've got my OneDrive backup. I've got Carbonite, and I've got everything that was important to me on an external drive.
Good.
I'm just wondering, when I did a Surface Studio, my USB key, rather than going with the full media creation tool, I put the key in that Surface Studio, and I put it.
Yeah, let it make the recovery. That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I recovered from that. When I rebooted, now I still see my folder. So my company name is Terra Firma, and I have a Terra Firma folder. All my work and all my clients and their own folders. All of that is visible. All of the files are listed there, but they're on the OneDrive. And so when I click on it,
it
downloads that picture or that file.
Yeah, you have to download it.
Do I want to do it from my OneDrive or my external drive? Because I don't want like 2 and 3 copies.
Well, it's always going to be faster to do it with a local drive than it is from the cloud, right? Even if you have high speed, right? It's always better. So, if you have copies on OneDrive and your local drive, I understand what you're worried about. If you restore from your local drive and that Terra Firma...
And OneDrive's going to say dash copy.
It's going to say new. I get it.
Yeah. And that happened when I got my OneDrive. I ended up doubling up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, that's so annoying when that happens.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got 100 megabit fiber here.
Do it from OneDrive then. Do it from OneDrive. Yeah, that'll avoid that problem. OneDrive will know, that's the same file. And the nice thing is it does it in the background. Unless you need it today, it might take a couple of days because they're not going to use all 100 megabits. But it'll do it. And that'll avoid that duplication issue. So really your question, I'm going to rephrase, is if I restored locally, how would I let OneDrive know this is the same file? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah.
Okay.
Get the OneDrive app. Let it restore from OneDrive. It'll take a little longer. It'll use bandwidth. But as long as you don't mind that, that'll certainly avoid that issue of duplication. That is annoying.
Right. I don't have any caps or anything.
Yeah,
so that's fine. Not an issue.
Yeah.
And I've only got, I think it was 144 gig backup on my external drive. And, so like you said, that's a couple days maybe, but... not the end of the world.
I'm going to guess, I don't know, and I'll have to do some research on this because I'm curious, that OneDrive identifies files using a hash of the file and probably keeps an index. In fact, I bet you could even find that index on OneDrive, in your OneDrive folder, that is a list of the hashes. So this file is this hash, this file is this hash. And that's how it knows if the file's been changed.
Okay.
If it's doing that intelligently, in other words, not looking at the name of the file or the modification date, but looking at the hash, the thing that'll be different is the modification date if you copy from your local, because it'll then change the date to the current date. And is that enough for OneDrive to say, oh, it's a new file? Apparently it is, because you had duplication in the past. If it were hashing them, if we're doing it intelligently, more slowly, admittedly, but intelligently, it would say, oh, no, it's the same file. I don't need to do anything about that.
So I wish I could find
that information. I'm looking right now on, you know, OneDrive tech papers and stuff. I'm sure somewhere in some white paper somewhere Microsoft's published this. That's what I would be curious. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll look too.
PC and, guy 8088 in the chat room is saying it's the archive bit. That was the old way we did this. When you did a backup, there was a bit in the file descriptors, just one bit, on or off, is it archived or not? Once it was backed up, it set the bit. But that's antiquated, and I doubt very much OneDrive's doing it with the archive bit.
I mean, I like backups, but too much of a good thing is too much of a
No, I have huge problems with duplications on photos and all sorts of things. It's a really big issue. And it does seem kind of silly to have to restore from OneDrive when you have a local copy. We're sitting right there, but I don't know how to avoid that duplication issue.
Hey, you got time for another quick question?
Sure.
Okay, so I put the 500 gigabyte Evo in there to replace that 64 gig, the M2 card. And that, so that's a cache, correct? So that's
no, not if you don't use the hybrid drive technique. So on mine, I made them separate drives. You have to set them up as hybrid drives to use that as a cache. And I don't recommend it because it's not smart enough to use it properly. That's such a big drive. Put Windows and all your apps on that. And then use the second drive as data. Yeah.
That's
how I would do it, because that hybrid drive technology is designed. You have a very small, as you said, 64 gig SSD, and the operating system goes, oh, here's something he accesses a lot. I'll put this on the SSD, and everything else is left on the spinning drive. It, as you can tell, because it's slow as molasses, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Apple did something similar they called the Fusion Drive. Didn't work that well. It was a solution, an interim solution, because SSDs were so expensive. They're not anymore. And honestly, don't do it. I can see no valid reason for doing it. Great to talk to you, G. Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's what you do. To make G. Scott, what I did is I made the C drive, which is where Windows needs to live and the apps want to live, the small SSD. And then we bought a slower terabyte SSD, just as you did, and that's data. Make that the D drive and move your home folders there. All your home folders can live on the D drive, and then they'll be used. Works really well. Now, I didn't talk about this, but I'm going to replace the Surface Studio. next week, we're getting the new Lenovo A940, which is their new all-in-one. I'm really excited about this. They called and said, you want to review it? It's out now. It was announced at CES. And I said, no, I don't want to review it. I'm buying it. And then I'll review it. But this is what I want on the round table set. Because it basically is like a Surface Studio. It tilts back. It doesn't quite go. It's not 15 degrees. It's 25. I think that'll be fine. But look, I love this. So it tilts back. See, I think that'll be just adequate. But look at this. Okay, so the knob, which Microsoft has a separate knob, is actually on either side of the monitor. Does the same thing that Microsoft's knob does. It has the speakers in front there on this big tray, because the big tray holds the keyboard, the mouse, and this is a Qi charger that, when you're not using the mouse and pencil, charges them, but can also charge your phone. What? And unlike Microsoft, Lenovo has loaded this up. So it's got an 8th generation i7. It's got 32 gigs of RAM. It's got, now we might want to fix this. It's got the 256 gig SSD plus a terabyte hard drive, but it's a 5400 RPM hard drive, cheap hard drive. I don't know. That may be adequate. It also comes with a GPU, the Radeon RX 560. Not a great one, but still a GPU. And it's maybe half as much as the Surface Studio. It was $1,900 with all in, including the mouse, the knob, and the pen. Actually, I got the discount. There was a discount. I got they had an offer code, so I got it for I think $1,800. Awesome. So these just came out. I will do a review, but that's going to replace. That's going to replace the Surface Studio on our roundtable, I think. The other thing I like about it, it's got ports on the side, which the Surface Studio does not. All the ports are in the back. What else? Just there's a lot of this is. I mean, I think they've done a really nice job with this. It's got Thunderbolt 3, which the Surface Studio doesn't. Oh, and I could put Linux on it. That was the big thing. I couldn't put Linux on the Surface Studio. Microsoft makes it almost impossible to put Linux on its Surfaces. Yeah, Surface Studio is really expensive. It's $3,500, $4,000, something like that. And you still have to buy the pencil and the knob. knob sold separately. So, I mean, we'll see. Who gets the Surface Studio? I have somebody in mind. I might give it to somebody this afternoon, actually. On Twit. Yes, side ports. And all the and lots of ports. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. The time where we talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, still can reach me. Just use Skype out. That'll do it. And it won't cost you anything. We also have a website, techguylabs.com. That's free to use. No sign-up required. Techguylabs.com. And everything we talk about is up there. And there's also a chat room. If you like to hobnob with other listeners at the same time, irc.twit.tv. And that's heavily moderated. So it's family-friendly and fun. irc.twit.tv. We do on the website a pick of the week every week. I think this week I'm going to make it. We were talking a minute or two ago with G. Scott about his Surface Studio. I fell in love with his Surface Studio for a couple of reasons. The main reason, it's an all-in-one, you know, like an iMac where the computer, the screen, everything's all in one piece. That's nice for a desktop. Most people don't buy desktops anymore. And I think Microsoft did something really innovative. They said, well, wait a minute now. What if we made it so that you could tilt the screen down and back to make it more like a drafting table, a drawing board? Wouldn't artists, designers, architects like it that way? We'll give you a pencil. They even have this kind of little knob that can be used to undo or scroll, or you could set it to be a color palette. And so that way you could be drawing with your right hand and using the knob with your left hand. And it's really nice. In fact, when we got it, I bought it when it first came out. $4,000 and several years ago. And we brought an artist in, a woman who illustrates children's books, and said, Svet, try this out. She loved it. And I think a lot of artists like it. I loved it because I used it on the TV show on This Week in Tech, our roundtable show, and I could push it down and out of the way but still use it, and it was big, and it's touch. It's like 28 inches. So that's what G. Scott has. But I think my product of the week this week, and I'm going to find out. It'll arrive later this week. It was announced by Lenovo, which, as you know, makes my favorite laptops, the ThinkPads, at CES last January. Finally started coming out a couple of months ago. And now that it's widely available, in fact, they even had a sale on it, I said, all right, I'm going to get it to see if it can replace the Surface Studio. And it's faster. It's half the price. It does all the same things. I think it's going to be a superior product, and I'm glad because, frankly, Microsoft, I think, is overcharging for these Surfaces. $4,000 for the Surface Studio 2 with a kind of junky hard drive and a underpowered processor. Lenovo put a nice 8th generation i7 in there, 32 gigs of RAM. It's got a GPU. I think they put it, instead of putting laptop guts in this computer, they gave it a real powerful engine. Maybe it shouldn't be the tip of the week because I don't have it yet. I'm impressed by it. I'll have a review for you in a couple of weeks. Oh, and yeah, it comes with the pen. It comes with the knob. Lenovo's take on the knob. And it comes with a little charging pad. So you keep the mouse, the wireless mouse and pen on that, and it charges them up. But you can also put your phone on it while you're working, which I like. I think that's a good idea. It's called the Lenovo Yoga A940, and I was pretty impressed by it, at least on paper. You know, sometimes these things disappoint when you get them, but I should get it later this week. On to the phone calls here, Audrey, Westlake Village, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Audrey.
Hi, Leo. I am lost, and I hope you can point me.
Well, I think if you head north on the I-80, oh, no, you're not that kind of lost. What can I do for you?
I need to get a tablet that has the best voice recognition there is. What I do on my regular computer, the old time kind, is a lot of very intricate word stuff. And so I need something where the voice recognition on the tablet will be very compatible if I email whatever Word document I create on the tablet through voice recognition, if I email that or somehow else get it to my regular computer so I can manipulate it. And I've looked at Apple, and I thought that's kind of bad pun, but, you know, mixing apples and oranges because my computer is not Apple.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
I'm kind of worried.
No, that doesn't matter. In fact, ironically, Microsoft, which makes the Word program, released their touch-first brand new version of Word first on the iPad. It is no longer the case. Microsoft has kind of, I think, given up on Windows. It's no longer the case that Microsoft makes its stuff work best on Windows. They used to say that. 5 years ago, when their new CEO, Satya Nadella, started running the company, the saying was, Microsoft software, wherever our users are, but it'll always work best on Windows. I noticed about 3 years ago they dropped, but it will always work best on Windows. It's not the case anymore. In fact, you can even use a web-based version of Word on any platform.
I need something to have all the features of my Word on my regular computer.
Yeah, well, so you have to figure, look, Word on your regular computer has about 8 gazillion features, of which nobody uses more than 5%. So you just have to see if the 5% you need are available on Word for the iPad.
Well, is there a non-Apple excellent voice recognition tablet?
Yeah. So the competitor to this is Google. And there are Android tablets. In fact, the best Android tablet is Samsung's Galaxy Tabs. They just released the new version of their Galaxy Tab. It's very powerful. Reminds you probably a lot of the iPad, except it's not running iOS. It's running Android. There's a Microsoft Office version for that as well. And it can be used with Google's voice recognition, which I think I would grant you is probably, I mean, Apple's is very good. You're saying that what you want to do is on the tablet, you want to dictate and have it type it out. Is that what you want to do?
Exactly. And I want it typed out into a Word document that I can then send to my computer somehow and manipulate it.
Honestly, if you don't have to use Word for that even. You could just have it in a text file or dictate it into an email and mail it and then use Word on your computer or on your desktop. I mean, the Word isn't important. Word is all about formatting. You don't care how it's formatted. You care about the text.
Yes.
So what you could do, honestly, on either of these platforms is open up an email, start dictating right into the email and press send. How long do you go? Do you dictate for hours? Are you writing a novel?
No, nothing like that. You know, maybe a few pages.
Okay. You know, you could do it right in your email port package, or you could do it in a note-taking app. Honestly, if I were you, I would use one of the note-taking apps on iOS or Android that automatically synchronizes to your desktop so you don't even have to send it. You just save it into that. It'll synchronize automatically. When you open your desktop, when you open the note-taking app, Evernote is a good example. Microsoft's OneNote is a great example. That's free on all platforms. You open OneNote, there it is. You don't have to send it or anything.
Hmm. So what do you think has the best voice recognition of non-Apple or of these things you're talking about?
Well, all Android devices will use Google's voice recognition. That is very, very good. This is a big product for Google. They're working very hard on it. I think it's excellent. So and the best tablets on Android, there aren't, honestly, Android tablets are lagging a little behind iPads, but the best tablet on Androids are the Galaxy Tabs. You can look at them. There are a variety of them. They just released the new one. I think it's the 5, the S5. But you can choose it by price. They have a whole variety of those. The Galaxy Tabs are the best Android tabs. And, you know, they'll cost about the same as an iPad. And they're great. And you'll use Google to dictate into it. You could put Microsoft's OneNote on it, which is free. You have it already because you have Office on your PC. It's free on Android or iOS, but you could dictate right into OneNote, save it. It'll automatically synchronize with OneDrive, and you'll have it on your PC before you can get over there.
Perfect. You just saved me hours of shopping. Thank you.
That's my job. That's my job. I like to go shopping with people virtually. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. This is exciting. We're having an unboxing here. Ashley is unboxing my bacon air freshener. Does it smell like bacon? No. Does it smell like anything you know? Oh, gosh. Oh, that doesn't smell like bacon at all. But, you know, it's kind of cool. I'm going to hang it from the microphone. Because that'll scare people. If I just, you know, hang it from the microphone here. Let's go back. I made Ashley open it so I didn't have to. It's starting to smell a little like bacon. Oh, my eyes are watering. I am not kidding. Dean in Hannibal, Missouri. Hello, Dean.
Hello there. Hey, I can smell the bacon from here.
Can you smell it from there? Can you smell what the tech guy's cooking?
Yeah, hey, you know, these computers can do a lot these days. Except mine can't.
Smell-o-vision. What's going on with your computer?
Well, I have kind of an antique. I have an HP laptop. It still has a Windows XP, and I have removed what I wanted to do was convert
Windows
it.
Windows XP?
Yeah, really.
That's terrifying.
And I'm still writing on stone tablets.
Well, Windows XP is fine if you don't go online, but if you go online, you're just a sitting duck.
Well, here's what I was planning on doing. I wanted to go into Neverware and basically
turn it into a Chromebook.
Chromebook, yeah. OS, yeah. But the problem is I can't connect to the internet, so I sometimes I can type in a website manually, and it'll show the home page, but when I click on it, it says I do not have internet connection.
Oh, man. If you have a friend with a computer, get a USB key. Go to your friend or go to the library and download it there and just put it on. Because you don't need to have a full-time internet connection. Although, come to think of it, you do with a Chromebook. Not going to be much use to you if you can't get online.
Yeah.
But maybe this will fix it.
Well, that's what I was wondering, if it would.
Yeah.
So get a thumb drive, you mean?
Yeah, get a thumb drive because that's how you install it. Now, I got to warn you, this is a really good idea. Google created Chrome OS. It's an open source operating system for Chromebooks, which are physical hardware. They look just like laptops. They really are functionally equivalent to laptops, but instead of running Windows, they're running Chrome OS, which is a version of Linux, and all it really is a browser. But it's a good choice for a secure operating system.
Right.
It should run well on older hardware, which yours obviously is.
Sure.
But my experience with Neverware, and I haven't tried it in a while, so they may have gotten better. They're a third party. They take the Chrome OS, actually it's called Chromium OS, the open source version of Chrome OS, and they modify it and they put it out. And you can do that because it's open source. It's freely and can be freely modified. But my experience has been it does not work on all hardware. Google hasn't put a lot of effort into making it work on all hardware because they know what hardware it's going to run on, right? Or the company, Acer or Samsung or whoever's making the Chromebook, they will customize it to fit their laptops. So it's a little hit or miss. I would look at the Neverware site and see if your brand works or do some Googling. Best way to try it is just download it and put it on a USB key and see if you can install it. The other thing you would do very well doing is instead of just putting a Chrome OS on there, put Linux on it. So Chrome OS is Linux, but it's kind of locked down, so it's only the browser. But you could put a full Linux on there, and I guarantee you, you could find a Linux that would work on that machine. There are versions of Linux for every kind of PC hardware. And my guess is, given it's XP, you probably don't have more than 2 gigs of RAM on that, right?
Probably. I'm not sure, but that's
probably... That's where you're really going to be limited. Now, Chrome OS will run in 2 or 4 gigs of RAM for sure. Windows kind of will. No modern version of Windows would, so Windows 10 is completely out for you. But you can find special versions of Linux for older hardware. And probably the best one for that is called Xubuntu, X-U-B-U-N-T-U. Same thing. You're going to have to find somewhere with an online connection so you can download it. It's not very big. It's about a gigabyte. Put it on
charge for that or what?
Nope. Absolutely free.
Hold on.
Absolutely free.
X-U-B-U-N-T-U.
XUBUNTU.org. It's designed for low-end machines, older machines. It's really kind of perfect for people running XP on older machines. It's pretty fast. Now, there are more modern is not the right word, but there are more slick versions of Linux out there. My favorite is Pop OS, but it may not run in a constrained environment like you have. Xubuntu is designed to run in a very kind of slower processor, light RAM, that kind of thing. So I would look at XUBUNTU instead of Neverware. It's designed to run on every bit of PC hardware, older hardware especially, is well supported.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll be better off. You'll get a full operating system. If you want to kind of treat it like it's Chrome OS, just don't use anything but Chrome.
Sure.
Then you got Chrome OS. But if you want to use more, you'll have more. There's, as I said last hour, 45,000 apps that will run on Xubuntu.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Including word processors, free, and most of it's free. It's open source software. Honestly, operating systems should be free. There's no...
Yeah.
I can understand paying for an application, especially because it has a more narrow audience, but operating systems have been around for 40 years. They're well understood. There's no magic being done here. They should be free. And Linux is fantastic. I highly recommend it.
Okay, barring that, I guess there's nothing else to do with the XP. I should just pursue the
modern program. Yeah, that's the best thing to do with an XP machine. Chances are it's too old to run Windows 10 well. You could do that if it were a little faster and had more memory. But but Xubuntu will run just great on it.
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Free operating system, says Mike B. in our chat room. That's socialism. You bet, baby. You bet. And I loves it. It's really a contribution. The people who write this are very accomplished programmers, starting with the guy who created Linux, Linus Torvalds. He was a Finnish graduate student in 1994 when he wrote it. He gave it away. These guys love writing code. They kind of agree with me that operating systems should be freely available, modifiable. And they keep it up to date, and it's a contribution they're making. Yeah, it's socialism. Nobody's making money on it, but they're doing it out of love of computing and technology, and I think it's great. I really do, and I want to support them. Hey, thanks.
All right, thanks.
Enjoy your new system. Admittedly, you know, when you have 1 or 2 gigs of RAM and a dual core processor, it's not going to be a lightning quick. It's not going to ever be like it was when it came out of the factory. Because everything's heavier. Chrome itself, the browser itself, is heavy. In fact, I wouldn't on Xubuntu probably put Chrome on it. It'll come with a browser, probably Firefox. That's a little lighter weight, easier to run. But it'll do all the things you want to. And the thing is, it's modern and it's secure. It's kept up to date. All these volunteers are working all the time to make sure it's up to date. So I think it's probably the best alternative for people who are stuck with older machines and don't want to scrap them. Don't want to have to. Microsoft wants you to buy a new machine. The PC industry wants you to buy a new machine, but it doesn't mean you have to. You see, it is socialism, isn't it? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Another half hour to go. That's plenty of time for your call. Give me a ring. Let's talk. Yeah, I got bit by that too, Scooter X. The new the Catalina update broke Firefox. I was pissed. Apple says it's their fault, which is interesting. I'm waiting for them to release it because it's ironic because I switched everything to Firefox. And it's immediately Mac OS broke it. Yeah. God, this smells bad. Oh, my God. I am not kidding. I guess you could say it's related to pig. I don't know. Smoked pig meat. Oh, I feel like gagging.
We can't smell a thing.
Come here. Put your nose in that. Here, hang this in the studio. Nuh-uh, he says. Nuh-uh. You want to smell it? It's not terrible.
I don't like the smell of normal bacon.
Well, good, you'll love this then.
Oh, God. That's horrendous.
Everybody thinks my bacon smells. My bacon brings all the boys to the yard. Makes them run away. Maybe it's rancid bacon. What does it say it's made of?
It's made in China.
It's made in China.
Yeah.
What can we sell to stupid Americans? Patterson says, it's not going to get better. What's wrong with you? Maybe I'll get used to it, Patterson. I don't know. Please recycle. I got it on my fingers now. I can't help but recycle it. This is. Burke says he still smells it. Oh, it's impossible. It's the impossible bacon. Oh. Our podcast today brought to you by my printer. Love my Epson EcoTank printer, a super tank printer that comes with up to 2 years of ink in the box. And then you get the ink replacement kit, you get another 2 years. That means no more last-minute trips to the store to get ink cartridges. You're loaded. You're ready. You just fill and chill. And these are great printers. The Epson EcoTanks are all-in-one wireless color printers. They have the tanks are super-sized. They're easy to fill. I filled a number of them because I bought a number of EcoTanks. Lisa's got one in her office. I got one in my office. And I love it because it's fewer trips to the store, less frustration. Epson has done something unbelievable. They've done what their customers demand, their customers want. Every other printer company is saying, how much more money can we make? Epson's saying, no, you know what? That's not right. Let's give them EcoTank. Let's give them ink. Let's make their life stress-free and easy. Uniquely keyed auto-stop ink bottles make it so easy to fill. When you go to the store in 2021, you get your next set. 2 years from now, because that's about how long it's going to last, depends on your usage, but tens of thousands of pages in some cases, you will know I'm in 2021. I won't be going back to the store till 2023. That's the future. I actually have not yet bought a second load of ink. We've had our EcoTank for a couple of years now. Check out Epson.com/EcoTankLeo. Transform the way your home or office prints. Do away with out-of-ink frustration. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. We're going to make it really easy with a back-to-school special. Now through September 30th, you get free overnight shipping when you use the promo code EcoTankLeo at checkout for any EcoTank printer that offers valid within the 48 contiguous states. Exclusions apply, subject to availability. Epson, E-P-S-O-N. You know how to spell Epson. Who doesn't? They've been making my printers since the Apple II. E-P-S-O-N, Epson.com/EcoTankLeo. And now these EcoTank printers, it's a revolution. EcoTank printers, just fill and chill. Epson, exceed your vision. Thank you, Epson, for supporting the Tech Guy Podcast. My bacon air freshener brings all the boys to the yard. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I don't know what it smells like, but it's definitely not bacon. Earl in Alpine, California. Hello, Earl. Leo Laporte.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
My wife got an Apple Watch, and she loves it. except it causes her to get a really bad rash on her arm.
Yeah.
So we Googled it, and apparently that is something to do with the material it's made out of.
I don't think now. So nickel is a very common material that will do that to people. Some people are susceptible to nickel irritation, but there's no nickel in the Apple Watch very intentionally. In fact, I'm surprised she's getting a reaction, except that, well, there you go. You can't. Have you tried different bands? Because maybe it's the band.
No, it's not the band. It's actually the watch.
Oh, that's too bad. Because it's really, if you don't put it on your wrist, it doesn't do anything much.
Yeah. And so I was wondering, do you know if Apple is coming out with something different?
Well, I think Apple thinks it's hypoallergenic. I don't think they, you know, I think they made a big point. Oh, nickel. Oh, yeah. But obviously nothing, somebody's allergic to anything, and I'm sorry your wife is. The one thing you could get, there are Apple Watch cases.
And, yeah.
And so they're made out of rubber or plastic or other materials. They cover the entire watch, including the back. So, I mean, they have to have a little opening because if you look on the back, that's where this blood sensors are, where they measure your heart rate and stuff. It has a little optical sensor. So my guess is, as long as I don't know what part of the watch he's allergic to, but at least that one light sensor has to be fairly close to the wrist. But it'll still work. It just won't do the heart rate stuff and the activity stuff. But there are a number of companies that make comfortable Apple Watch cases. You got to look carefully, though, to make sure they'll cover the back as well as the front, because there are many that only cover the front. But if you could find one, I'm looking at the Uniya. It's on Amazon for $9, and it has a back and a front. Although the back, I don't know how much it'll protect her from the aluminum in the watch, the metal part. But that glass, again, that glass where the reader is, that's got to touch her wrists. But glass, I don't think, is anybody allergic to glass? I don't think so. Maybe it's the metal. Do you know what part of the watch bothers her?
Well, it's right in the center. When she takes the watch off, it's right in the dead center.
And that's what you need to touch your wrists if you want all of those features to work. Apple says if you make it too tight, it could cause rubbing and irritation. That's not an allergy, but we'll put the Apple the link to the Apple document about this. Has she tried wearing it a little looser?
Yeah, and we tried different bands, and nothing seems to help.
Yeah, well, look for a case. There are some cases that will protect part of the back of it, but I don't think any of them will cover the entire back. Although I guess you could put something in there, a little piece of rubber or something, a little dental dam or something, cut it out, put it in the back there to protect her if she really wants to wear a watch. She's really dedicated to wearing that watch, isn't she?
Yeah.
I don't blame her. You gave it to her. That's a sweet gift. Yeah. I'm sorry that she's allergic to it. What does she want to use it for?
Well, she can answer her phone on it.
See, that'll work. All of that'll work without touching her wrist. What you're going to lose is the heart rate monitor, the activity monitor, although it'll still know when she's taking steps and things like that. It just won't know what her heart rate is. And somebody in the chat room, Seal, says, we put clear nail polish. That's an idea. Put it on the back of the watch. The watch may even continue to work if it's clear, and that as long as she's not allergic to nail polish, that will protect her skin.
Yeah. I'll give that a try.
That might be an idea. Yeah, thank you, Seal, for that suggestion in our chat room. What a nice, you're sweetie to give her that. I'm sorry it irritates her. My wife did not want to wear the Apple Watch for a long time. I've been wearing one since it came out off and on. I wear it all the time now. And the only thing that got her to wear it was she was playing Pokemon Go, believe it or not. And there was a Pokemon Go app that would monitor her steps, and that way she could capture more Pokemon or something. I don't know. And that got her wearing it. And now she loves it because she loves the activity monitor. She's very competitive. She wants to make sure her rings get all the way around. I hear a lot of people say that Apple Watch is really great for their health because it's kind of just nudging you. Well, Zach was here yesterday, stood up, right? Because your watch told you to stand up. And there you go. There you go, right? If you can find a way that she can wear it, it'll grow on her, and not in a bad way. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. There are a few more lines open, and I think I'm going to have time to get to more people. But let's start with Jason in Newport Beach, California. Hi, Jason.
Newport Beach, California.
That's you. That's you, Jason. Jason.
No, it's Stephen Whittier.
Well, I'll take you. Sorry, Stephen Whittier.
Oh, no, Dave.
Oh, Dave. Sorry, Dave and Whittier. Well, good to see you. Jason's listening going, wait, what? It's me. No, I'll talk to you in a minute, Jason. I'm going to talk to David now. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you doing, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
Now that we got through that.
Yeah.
I'll get right to the issue. I've got a vacation home about 400 miles from here, and I've got security cameras in it, and everything's fine having them on the local telco, which is actually pretty crummy. But there are Wi-Fi cameras, and there's six of them, and they go the provided telephone company modem. No problem with that. The problem really is, other than when their service goes bad 400 miles away out there, they get around to fixing it whenever they feel like it, which can be days or a week.
But that's why you have the cabin there, David. It's the countryside, right?
Yeah, hide out and don't bother me.
Are you looking for bears? What are you looking for out there?
No. We use it. We keep a boat there. It's at a lake, and we keep a boat. It's 10 miles from a lake, and we keep a boat there and that type of thing.
How nice.
And we built it about 20 years ago, and it was lots of fun. Now it's all maintenance, you know.
Yeah.
But at any rate, we put the cameras in there, and they work out pretty well. They're D-Link and Amcrest.
Excellent.
And,
okay.
Wi-Fi cameras, they work well. I can call in and look, or if every time there's any motion, they send an email with the pictures attached. So that works out fine. The only trouble is that the local telephone company is jacking the rate higher and higher and higher and higher. And I'm going, as an experiment, I took another, like a seventh camera, and I took a cell phone that I get through your recommendation from 5 years ago, Ting.
Oh, yeah.
And it only costs like $6
a
month.
It's cheap, yeah. And you pay for the bandwidth you use.
Well, the thing was that we originally had no bandwidth. It was just audio only on that circuit. But I took the camera. I couldn't get the camera to work, but I used an auto dialer that picks up audio in place of the camera, and then ran that into a D-Link bridge, and then ran that into the cell phone over Bluetooth, and it worked that way. That one little circuit with that one, which was going to be a camera. So at any rate, these cameras, and I don't know how to do it.
So I think if you, I don't know if Ting offers this, but some other people offer this, which is a little device. So if your phone could do hotspotting, you know what a hotspot is?
Sort of.
Yeah. So some phones, you have to look on the phone, will let you share their internet access through, because they're getting their internet through the LTE, Tings or whoever's, right? And then they can be turned into what is effectively a Wi-Fi hotspot, replacing your Wi-Fi router from your phone company with your phone. And as long as your cameras can see it, that may be one other issue that, you know, I don't know how far it'll go. It should go, in theory, it should go 150 feet. But as long as your cameras can see
that's
it.
That's good.
Yeah. then they could join that network instead. They'd be using your LTE bandwidth. So the question is whether that phone you have offers a hotspot and whether Ting will let you use a hotspot and how much they'll charge you. Other companies might let you. So this is a common use of LTE as an internet access. In fact, a lot of people with security cameras use it that way. The thing to remember is those cameras probably use a lot of bandwidth. So check, because, for instance, my Nest cameras can use as much as a megabit per second, which, you know, if you have six cameras, 6 megabits a second, that's going to be probably faster than your LTE network can handle.
Well, they're motion triggered.
Ah, perfect. So they're not always on. Perfect.
Yeah, they're not always on.
So if a bear walks by, and by the way, this I think this bacon scent strip would really attract bears if you wanted them. Burke has come with a special hazmat outfit to take them, and he's gonna put them into a special hazmat bag and dispose of it. Thank you, Burke. God bless you. Our long national nightmare is over. So, but you could do what you want to do in principle, which is use the LTE for your bandwidth. But that's what you'd need. You either need a phone that can do hotspotting and a carrier that will allow you, or you can go to Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, and say, I want a little Wi-Fi hotspot. And they also will sell you those. They're not phones. They're just little devices but you'll pay, obviously. It'll become they become your internet supervisor service provider. But given that, you know, you're probably not using a lot of bandwidth, you could figure that out, and there you go.
Okay. Well, we'll work it that way. I guess I'll get a hold of the service provider. And the other thing is that the phone that I have in there now is apparently Ting is getting rid of their connections with on CDMA. Or
yeah, everybody is. Nobody wants to. And that's you don't want that. You want LTE. So you need a newer phone that supports LTE. Everybody's going to use LTE going forward. I would price that versus going. Is there good cell service up there? Ting uses T-Mobile, I think. But if you can get good cell service from any one of the big carriers, go to the company stores and tell them what you want, and they can figure that out for you.
Okay.
All right. I got to run. Sounds good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo.
Watch for the Bears. Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks to Michael Cozio filling in for Big Peeway. He is at the Taste of Inglewood. Taste of Inglewood today. If you're going out to Inglewood for a taste of it, I hope they have that fake bacon because that's good stuff. Make sure you look for Big Peewee spinning the discs, doing the announcing there. Michael, you've been doing a great job too. We love our musical director, Michael Cozio, making a return appearance today. You can catch him. You're mostly on Coast to Coast. Is that what you do mostly these days? All right. If you're up late, check out Michael's work at Coast to Coast. And thanks also, of course, to the wonderful Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. On we go with Jason in Newport Beach, California. Oh, wait a minute. I did David because I thought it was Jason, but now it actually is Jason. Hi, Jason.
Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
I hope I didn't scare you when I said your name wrong last time.
Well, if you scared me, I've been scared since 2014 when I first talked to you.
Oh!
If you remember, I'm going to... would you be kind enough? I'm sorry to bother you because this only is happening simply because my hands are tied because of what these providers are doing. Do you remember I called you and I said AT&T has come and hijacked my bundle?
Yes, I do remember that, yeah.
I haven't had AT&T. I've never been delinquent, so I haven't been able to get anything, and they have a monopoly on my building.
That's the key.
No. Well, let me present it to you, if I may. And I mean, I am without an internet. You know, the phone, I can't do any articles. I can't go to the library. I mean, it is basically for AT&T to basically come to my house and put a U-verse without my permission. I mean, I have to basically stay with what I am comfortable financially.
Yeah, of course. But you're in an apartment building, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
And that's what happens in America.
Well,
it's a shame, but this is what's
happening. I've gone to Canada. Dad told me that. He said, let's go to Canada.
Let's go to Canada.
No.
It probably happens
in
Canada, too, I'm saying.
No. Okay. At least they're polite. You know, do you remember the old days, the AT&T? This is not the AT&T.
Let us in. Well, the reason they do that, though, is because they have a deal with your apartment complex. They made a deal. They're the single, only, one and only provider in there.
But it is unethical. And it
I
is
agree. I agree, but it's not illegal.
Mr. Laporte, in 4 years, my mother was calling me from overseas on landline, and she was sick, and she died.
Oh, Jason, I'm so sorry.
No, you tell me, I can't get anything. I mean, I've got a triple A, rating on my
check. Are they refusing you service?
They owe me money. I've gone to Kamala Harris when she was Attorney General. I went to Utility Commission. And they basically disconnected my lifeline. I mean, they should have known.
No, that's not.
This is so rational.
I think what you need to do is go to the apartment complex. Go to the Homeowners Association.
With all due respect, if you have heard of a slum rich landlord, if you try to find a landlord, good luck. Because I've had title company, Chicago Title, the best one that I know.
It's so sad because you live in Newport Beach. You live in a beautiful area.
Well, really interesting brain that they are really running the show. It's been 5 days, just to give you an idea, my refrigerator is not working.
Yeah.
They have not paid attention to it.
I completely sympathize, Jason. I feel so bad for you. But honestly, you're...
What do I do?
I don't think there's anything you can do. There are a couple of things you can do. You're stuck with the deal that the apartment complex made with AT&T. That's just a fact. You can't bring in your own internet. You could bring in a wireless internet, but you can't bring anything wired in. So if you wanted to do what I was telling the last caller to do, which is go to a phone company, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and arrange for internet wireless internet access, there's no way the apartment complex could stop you from doing that. But anything wired, they don't get access to the wire closet. AT&T has a monopoly. They negotiated that. And this is a problem all over the country. And I've been told it's the same in Canada. And it makes sense. You're an apartment complex. You're going to try to get the best deal you can. You go to all the providers. The providers say, yeah, we'll wire it, but we want an exclusive. And they sign these deals. I'm sure it says this in the lease. You might want to read that 800-page lease you got, because I'm sure it says it in the lease. Your recourse, probably your best recourse, is not to go to AT&T, but to go to the apartment complex and say, you need to help me with AT&T. You made this deal. These guys aren't living up to it. Failing that, in California, the Public Utilities Commission is responsible for regulating. Might contact them. I'm not sure. Maybe somebody in our chat room can tell me who's responsible for regulating the apartment complex. I don't know. Maybe the city of Newport Beach. But you're kind of stuck with that deal. They made that deal. And so it's something to keep in mind when you buy a condo or you rent an apartment, when you move into a complex. It's the first question I ask before I move anywhere. What's the internet access? How good is it? Who's responsible for it? Do I have a choice of providers? That's a big question. Because if you don't have a choice of providers, you know what you don't have? You don't have competition. You don't have competition. There's no price pressure on these guys. There's no pressure to innovate. There's no pressure to do anything. Where are you going to go? Remember Lily Tomlin? We're the phone company. We don't care. We don't have to. That's a terrible Lily Tomlin impression, but the point is the same. They don't have to care. They're a monopoly. So, my heart breaks for you. I'm sorry you're stuck with this. But just like everything else in that apartment complex, if you didn't like the garbage collection, who do you complain to? If the power is out, who do you complain to? If there's a leak in the plumbing, who do you complain to? It's all down on the owners of the apartment. And if they're slumlords, I'm so sorry, then you're just going to have to move, I guess. You're stuck with it. And, of course, part of the problem with this is very, very expensive to move, and you're stuck. You're stuck. Complaining to me isn't going to help. I can't do anything about it. Maybe if you're lucky, the city of Newport Beach can help, or the Public Utilities Commission. Maybe Kamala. I don't know. I feel for you. I'm really sorry. Finally, let's go to Hutchinson, Kansas. Roland is on the line. Hello, Roland.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking for a disc. A cam for my car while I'm riding around, just in case something happens with a dash cam.
Yeah. Yeah, I have one. There's a number of them, of course. If you go to the Wirecutter, which is a great review site run by the – used to be run by independently. Brian Lamb started it after he left Gizmodo. New York Times bought it fairly recently, but they do really excellent reviews. Their favorite dash cam is not the same as the one I like, but their favorite is the Garmin dash cam 55. Whoops. Yeah, no, that's right. That's the one they like. That replaced one that was discontinued, but they – they say it's high resolution, sharper video, small, discreet, has a mount that's easy to use, $155. But I will tell you what I use, which is a little more expensive. It has its own built-in LTE, which means if you get in an accident, it immediately starts uploading images. So even if you're disabled or, you know, your connection is gone, you can still get those images. It has front and rear facing. So it gets a picture of you in the cabin and everything out the window. And the advantage of that is if somebody breaks into your car, if they break the glass, the camera immediately starts recording, sends you a notification because it has its own LTE, and sends you the video. Plus, it shines a really bright light. So it's called the Owl Cam, OWL, and it's at owlcam.com. It is my favorite, absolutely, but it's twice as expensive. It's $350. So I'll give you the two choices. Both of them work great, do everything you want. I love the Owl Cam because it comes with LTE service. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.